anniversary, we also salute the community for supporting us, our many allies, the Resource Center for Nonviolence, Barrios Unidos, the anarchist collectives of Santa Cruz, the students of UNAMI, the students of UCSC, MECHA, students informing now, and all those that we didn't mention who remember you, and our 15 years of activism will not be successful without your assistance and contribution, educating you, and support as fellow comrades in this struggle. So in this 15th anniversary, we also salute you.
Still pimping, but keep your Chevy low to the ground. Bato, it's a setup, and I'm getting fed up. Sick of bullshit going on around town. Bato, never give up, and forever live up. Up to the rep of a universal sound. Bato, keep your light on. Red beam, night scope, side on. In the air, fire off around. Bato, load your clip up. Now it's time to get up. The murderer is still in the crowd. Empty all your clips out. Shape up a ship out. He couldn't find his way through the gunpowder's cloud. Bato didn't make it. Homies try to save him. We couldn't hear him. Guns got too loud. Bato, get your clown on. I'ma get my frown on. You just too funny. Yeah, you just too foul. Bato, put your vest on. Here's my aggression. No, I haven't felt this good in a while. Bato's in the family. Bottles of the brandy. Cohibas.
Mete Kutli, Mete Siwat, Tonansin Yolot, Tonansin Yolot, Tonansin Yolot, Tonansin Yolot, Tlaso Kamat.
The Chicano is the key to the future harmony of this continent, North and South America.
The Brown Berets, a group of Chicanos and Chicanas who fought for equality and justice, they were and are part of the social and political activism that swept through the Southwest during the 1960s and 70s. Their support for the United Farm Workers, opposition to the Vietnam War, and advocacy against police brutality and injustices were important themes in their messages. The Brown Berets staged events that included the East LA High School blowouts in 1968, in which several thousand students participated in, and in the Vietnam War protest march known as the Chicano Moratorium in 1970 that turned violent and claimed the lives of several, including Rubén Salazar, a prominent Chicano journalist. Also, the occupation of the Santa Catalina Islands off the coast of California in 1972, in which they renamed the island Aztlán Libre and occupied it for nearly a month.
Law enforcement agencies, including the FBI's COINTELPRO unit, infiltrated the Brown Berets, fearing the militant group would plan hostile insurrection against U.S. interests. Eventually, the group disbanded in 1972, which claimed to have over 5,000 members at the time nationwide. However, many autonomous chapters remained active, such as the Brown Berets of Aztlán, based in San Diego. The group came under heavy scrutiny and pressure under counterintelligence groups and their tactics of dissension.
The community of Watsonville is one that has seen its share of struggles, from the cannery strike in 1985 to the struggle for district elections to the devastating earthquake in 1989 in which the community came together to transcend from this catastrophe. In Watsonville, a community that has been deeply entrenched in political activism and community service, youth have played a significant role. One of the most prominent groups has been the Brown Berets.
Started in Watsonville in April of 1994 in response to the killing of Jessica and Jorge Cortez, the Brown Berets wanted to focus on community violence and promoting higher education. Through the principle of direct action, they organized to unite their community.
From the very beginning, this organization has been willing to be the group that stands up for social justice, that speaks up for what is right in this community, and provides that voice for young people that many times is not representative of decisions that can be made in this community or out in the schools. And so we need more organizations like the Brown Berets to continue to develop that type of leadership. A long time ago we said, who better to be the next generation of leaders in this area than young people who grew up in this community, who were raised in this community, that started grassroots organizing from a very early age, that knew the issues impacting working families, that then went on to get their college degrees, took their education seriously, and then come back home to continue that leadership.
So I first heard of the Brown Berets when my older sister, Monica, who's older by 8 years, I found out she was in the Brown Berets, and she would always go to the marches and protests, and her and my mom, they would take me, and I just remember seeing like a bunch of older people, like just dressed in brown with the berets on, and like they looked all cool, you know. So I was a little kid, I really looked up to them, and I couldn't wait for the day when I would be able to go to my first brown beret meeting.
So my name is Ramiro. I've been a part of the Watson Brown Berets for almost 6 years now. And the reason why I started actually was because the Brown Berets represented something that I had in me for a long time, which was the need to organize here in Watsonville.
Yeah, coming up is a community action group called the Brown Berets. They are out of Watsonville. They're going to be helping us out with some songs and giving us some good education with a video and just blessing us with their presence. So.
Our history, we network with many organizations. As a matter of fact, we collaborate with organizations all over the Bay Area. We started with an organization that's been developing all around the Bay Area called Student Empowerment Project. And we kind of became under the wing of the Student Empowerment Project and numerous organizations. We're not only working with other racial organizations, we're even working with religious organizations, where we're collaborating with every single community group that is putting some effort to make some change in the community, make a positive change for our youth and our community. So we kind of network with every single organization around. As far as living wage, we've always been fighting at those issues. We've networked with the United Farm Workers that's fought tremendously for better wages in the fields, in the canneries, for young women and young men and young youth who are living off McDonald's pay of minimum wage of $6.95. And so we're trying to push those economic changes. But we have to begin by, you know, organizing with all numerous organizations, not just ourselves. It starts with one step, and then it continues on with more organizations to continue that second step.
Brown Berets were important to the community of Watsonville because up until that point, there hadn't been an organization for youth like this. And there certainly hadn't been an organization by youth. You know, there might have been services for youth, but the cool thing and the powerful thing about the Watsonville Brown Berets when they first started in 1994 was that it was created of the young people for the young people. And it was created based on issues that were important to them, which was gang violence and young people dying.
Growing violence in their community was a problem, and that they needed to take a stance against it, and they wanted to do something and be really proactive with the message of peace and unity. And so they organized a march, and they teamed up with local nonprofits and other folks and some of their early mentors who kind of helped them organize this.
We're doing this, it's just, we need to do this. We need to do this every year, because if not, all these victims of violence, all these victims of injustice will be forgotten every year.
A young group of Chicanos started the Brown Berets, and they initiated that something that has really impacted Watsonville. As a youth group, they started marching, sending the barrio, the message to the barrio to stop the violence and to people to stop killing raza.
To the 12th Annual Peace and Unity March.
Jessica Cortez, 9 years old. Jorge Cortez, 16. Tony Valdivia, 19. Victor Cimental, 23.
I'm Rosa de Ramirez. My son is Antonio Valdivia. I am here this morning for the same purpose that everybody's here. To remember our people that have died.
Me and my family were here. My brother that was killed in 88.
Started in response to violence in our own community, and I'm not controversial.
It's, you know, carry the torch of the message of nonviolence to young people and, you know, the families of victims and their friends for a really long time now. And it's just amazing work that the Braves have been doing for 12 years, and I'm just really proud to be a part of it. I'm proud to represent the Resource Center for Nonviolence here today and the Youth Empowerment Program, because that's exactly what this is. This is youth empowering themselves to bring their message to people that need to hear it. And, you know, whatever we can do to support that is a good thing. I think it's especially important as well in these times of war, and when our own government seems to rely on violence as a way to resolve, you know, international conflicts, it doesn't make any sense. It's not setting the example, you know. We hear, young people hear, you know, don't be violent, don't do drugs. We hear all these messages, but then you look at the government's examples and it's just totally hypocritical.
The events that we've been consistent organizing every year since 2001 has been Youth in Power. And this was an event where we can utilize music, hip-hop, graffiti art in order to attract people, young people in particular, into higher consciousness, political consciousness, to get them involved in community activism.
Some of the threat of hip-hop music and hip-hop culture is very real, because hip-hop, the original principles of hip-hop, there were the five elements: b-boying and breakdancing, DJing, spinning records, MCing or rapping, and then you had graffiti art, you know.
It started in 2001, and basically it's an event where we bring together hip-hop, rock, different groups, musical groups that have a positive message, that talk about things going on in different communities, black, brown communities. And we also invite a lot of different organizations to come through, either the table to show their information, or we have, you know, alternative to military. We have different nonprofits come in to show youth that there are organizations that are working in these communities to better the conditions. And since in Watsonville, there is no, you know, nothing, no other groups are really doing anything like this on a yearly basis. And so basically we've had Immortal Technique come from Harlem, New York. He's done it for free. We've had speakers like Mario Africa, Adisa Banjoko, Fred Hampton Jr. to show that solidarity with the black community. We've had groups like Quinto Sol come through, local groups like PLG, Para La Gente, groups from LA, females, see what say.
Shackled the trap, living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Well, fuck that. I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I gone too far, ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women,
creating Latinos.
Motherfuckers made me out of self-righteous hatred. Now you got yourself a virus.
Fuck it, a matrix.
Suicide bomber, strapped and ready to flow.
Noise for the Brown Berets.
Strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand? Who never let me live out.
A lot of these, a lot of the immigrant community has to live within the shadows, and they live in fear, you know, fear that they're going to be discovered, that they're undocumented, and the fear that they could be separated from their families. And so what these marches were doing, the marches leading up to May 1st, showed the immigrant community that you have a voice and you have a power.
February 21st, 2006, the Brown Berets are invited to Riverside, Southern California. And this is where the first talks of having a May 1st march occurred. We met, there was organizations like ours, the Brown Berets, there was unions there, there was community organizations, there was day labor organizations, there was immigrant rights groups, there was also academics there, and also politicians. And pretty much what was talked about, it was the different things, the planning that was going to go into these marches. Then as time got closer around March, we brought that back, and we had a march in Santa Cruz. And at the same time, there were marches going on in Los Angeles and other parts of the country that were, you know, over 100,000 plus sometimes.
can still pimp it, but keep your Chevy low to the ground. Vato is a setup, and I'm getting fed up. Sick of bullshit going on around town. Vato never give up, and forever live up. Up to the rep of a universal sound. Vato, keep your...
Soy nueva, tengo 8 meses aquí y considero que es muy importante porque es un medio en el cual abre muchas puertas para uno de mujer. Muchas veces uno se queda en casa a ver cómo cambia nuestra comunidad en lugar de decir nosotros mismos cómo cambiar a nuestra comunidad.
This organization believes in incorporating many people's struggles, an international struggle, a community struggle. Like QEP said, it's intercommunalism, uniting communities, but we're recognizing our differences, and not just through Chicanos, but all communities of color, marginalized communities, oppressed people.
I'm donating my time to Watsonville Bike Shack because I have a passion, and I grew up here in Watsonville, and I have a passion for the youth, and I like working with youth. I like to empower them in a way where I show them a new skill, right, and I show them how to like work on their bikes, so when we're not around, they can fix their own bikes at home or wherever they might be at.
Never trust the power structure to do the right thing, and that there's never progress without struggle, and that we are never going to be able to stop struggling. We're never just going to be an organization that has parties. We're never going to be an organization that just does jump houses in the park and face paints. We're always going to be an organization that progresses for social justice. Therefore, we will always be involved in struggle.
Mexica, Gawi, Mexica, Gawi. Pump your fist if you're a revolutionist. Mexica, Gawi, Mexica, Gawi. Pump your fist if you live indigenous.
Hip hop is my weapon. I be the enemy, so all oppressors keep stepping. Open up wide from north to south, yo, east to the west side. From what is above to the region of the dead, I spit indigenous lyrics aiming straight for your head. Cause my blood is red, like I said, underground said. You can take my life, but you never get my soul. Yo, so equal that soul. Now I'm under control of my own destino. The sun godfather, like my name was Al Pacino. The earth mother goddess, the culture and the knowledge you can never rob from us. These are my protectors from all four sectors. The water keeps me going like a river when I'm flowing. The earth is my home, the place where I return whenever I begin to roam. The air in my lung helps the movement of my tongue, plus the fire is within from beginning to the end. So I grip the microphone like a boa constrictor, cause I am and always will be the victor.
I saw America's blue in my backyard just the other day. I saw a shiny red Gucci dress, but it wasn't the first time. Last time they rode by, shiny rims to impress. They walked up to me with a totalitarian wind. Governmental policy, police sounds, she said. Colombia house, your honey, your body will give me money. The grass is looking green in the placenta of your dreams. Let me murder your inhabitants. So Texas, cooking, walking, walking. Te digo que esos pais están muy atrevidos. Compañera, amiga, África del Este. Le cogieron, le violaron en ese callejón. Casi le mataron, medicina le robaron. El alma le sacaron, su cuerpo le enfermaron. Yo sé que los bandidos quieren su riqueza. Celoso de su fuerza le robaron su esencia. Mentira en su lengua, Norteamérica tiene la violencia. Carga la violencia, vive la violencia. America's wife traded her womb, became a bitch. Came into her body, killed a ghost. Children with a stick, my heels scratched them off like an itch. Called them criminals, but the biggest creep is sporting cop with diamond boots. Crime and self constellation for the Middle East. The sun rises and said he gave us all an eclipse. 97% is gone for her stylish shoes. Meanwhile, Nike sneakers tied around my neck like a noose. My girl, the rack's been part of the hood for a long time. America's been keeping an eye for a long time. Love the things she carried. One day calling her baby, pushes weight against her breast. Forced into her buried. Unjust, she tried running, whisper, I know you'll give me all that milk and honey.
most recent invasion of the continental United States is nothing less than the product of a 500-year history of invasion, beginning with the first European colonizer settlers and their wholesale theft of native lands in the Americas. And don't.
We're organizing against what we term genocide. And the first and most obvious form of it is in the war in Vietnam, where thousands of our young men are dying. If we can stop that, keep our families together, that's the first and most obvious form of genocide. We're going to be helping out some of the organizations in the fincas, in the prisons, on that issue, because that's another form of genocide, as well as the genocide that our people have faced in the fields and that Cesar Chavez has worked on. What we're planning to do is organize not from the top, the way this corrupt society is, but from the bottom, and treat the real problems that our community faces.
Okay. What I want to talk about is, more than anything, what the indigenous uprisings that are going on in Chiapas and in Oaxaca have to do with us here. How can it function for us, what it has to do with us, why we have anything to do with it whatsoever. And there's a lot of different connections. The indigenous tribes in Oaxaca said, and in Chiapas have been saying that they've been fighting for their survival, for their existence for over 500 years. This isn't a metaphor. It isn't kind of like 500 years. It's literally 500 years. And indigenous tribes, they're Native Americans that exist throughout Mexico, that exist only because they've resisted colonialism, they've resisted annihilation, they've resisted genocide, and today they're continuing to resist the displacement of their lands and the devaluation of their indigenous tradition. One of the things that I feel that connects us in barrios or hoods in the United States with the compas and Chiapas and Oaxaca is that we're all kind of treated like worthless. The media, what does the media say about our hoods? It says that we're all criminals. It says that we're all drug dealers, that we're all gangbangers. That the only violence, the only crime going on in our community is as a result of us and our own issues, and why don't those people just get their shit together, etc., etc., right? Well, the same things are said about Mexico as a country as a whole. Right now, more than ever, we're hearing all this crap about, well, Mexico is just like a rogue state. It could be like Pakistan at any moment. There's all these drug dealers. We're going to have to militarize the border. Now, that's not to say that there aren't problems in the hood and there aren't problems in Mexico. But why is it the mainstream media always has to focus on the most negative things and focus on the things that do nothing but devalue our experience, devalue our life, devalue what's really going on, you know? And devalue the vast majority of people who don't have anything to do with crime, and drugs, and anything like that. So, from my personal perspective, Oaxaca and Chiapas, and maybe Mexico as a whole, is like a giant hood. Like a giant ghetto that gets treated like a ghetto, gets treated like a hood, especially in the mainstream media. Right? And when you ask kids in the hood here in the United States who it is that is oppressing them, who it is that is harassing them, who it is that's giving them a hard time on a regular basis, immediately they answer the police. The first response. And certainly the police are a major agent of power inside of our communities, but they're not the most powerful characters. In reality, they're just agents of the power, right? So I always remind kids, well, the police have a boss, and the boss is the city government, and the city government has a boss, it's the state government. State government has a boss, it's the federal government. And then the big question is, who's the federal government's boss? And more, it's becoming very clear that the federal government's boss is nothing other than big business, corporations, banks. They're kind of running the show and imposing a system that is more and more about domination, more and more about control, more and more about power. And the system is none other than capitalist imperialism. I hate using big words like that, and I'm going to get as far away from them as possible. But what I mean by capitalism, I basically mean for profit. Right? Plain and simple. No political connotations there. But when I say imperialism, what I'm talking about is the taking of land, labor, and resources by force. So when I say capitalist imperialism, what establishing is the taking of land, labor, and resources by force for profit. And more, we have fallen victims to a system that is systematically devaluing certain sectors of society, in particular the poor, in particular indigenous people, in particular communities of color, in particular women and children are systematically devalued by the mainstream media, by all sorts of characters, right? So, more and more, what we're seeing is that this entire system has behind it this media machine, you know, that is doing nothing but devaluing our communities. The media, when we as communities invented hip-hop as an expression of community resistance, as an expression of artistic alternative, as an expression of our own identity in this world, hip-hop was taken by the media and used against us and turned into bling-bling and misogyny and sexism and all these different things that now parents automatically say, think, wow, hip-hop, well, that's that messed up, you know, booty music, you know, whatever, whatever. But the reality is the history of hip-hop is that there was an expression of resistance. It was an expression of resistance from the South Bronx to oppression, to marginalization, right? And again, the media is an enemy to our communities because the media is owned by interests that want to make a profit, right? So what we have is a situation where the media is focusing on one type of crime in this world when we really have at least two types of crime, right? The one type of crime that the media is focusing on is property crime, or what I would call crimes of poverty or crimes of survival. I'm not trying to say that it's okay for people to be selling heroin and crack cocaine in our communities, but I think it's really important that we begin to ask ourselves, what is it that's forcing people to do this? What is it that's forcing people to engage in these types of activities? Is it by choice, or is it economic and political and social factors that are pushing people to engage in this type of criminal activity? The other type of crime that we don't hear about in the media is what I call crimes of power, or crimes of the powerful. Major corporations that exploit their workers. Major corporations that move their operations to global south countries in order to be able to have child labor, in order to be able to have unregulated exposure to chemicals and toxins, in order to have unregulated work hours, in order to have all these different things that were guaranteed in this country. Well, corporations are figuring out ways to exploit people in other places and hide behind third world status, right? Other things that we're not hearing about in the fields, out here in the strawberry picking fields and in the tomato fields all the way to Florida, we have modern day slavery going on in this country still today. People are being held captive, paid slave wages, forced into debt systems that make it impossible to get out of. That's not on the local news. It's not coming up. The only places you hear these things are if you reach out and you try to find out about what's going on. You know? So I think it's important to make a clear distinction between crimes of power and crimes of poverty or crimes of survival, right? And more it is becoming very clear to me from my work in Oaxaca in particular that the greatest criminals in this world are actually the crimes of power. The greatest criminal system in this world is this system of capitalist imperialism. Why is that? And that's some pretty bold shit to say out loud, so I want to back it up. Capitalist imperialism is the greatest criminal. Why? Because it has reduced all of human life and all of our Earth's natural resources into merchandise, into variables in an equation for profit. More and more natural resources like gold, silver, uranium, petroleum, water are outweighing the worth of human beings that are inhabiting the lands that are rich in these natural resources. We see a scale type situation where gold is outweighing Africans, where diamonds is outweighing Africans, where oil is outweighing Iraqis, where opium is outweighing Afghans, right? More and more, the natural resources in this world that are important to this political economy are considered to be more valuable than human life. The word you might be swimming around in your head looking for is genocide. Human beings are considered a disposable variable in this economic equation. And that's just part of the facts. That's just part of how this system works. It's all about math, right? Plugging us in and plugging us out of the system. Oh wow, this is an old note. So okay, I'm gonna just do it off my head. Now, I've identified several agents in this system that are characters that kind of like impose it either through legitimate or illegitimate means. And I want to talk to you all about them, right? So we have a real clear idea. The compas call the system our common enemy, right? And have another big ugly word for it that they say is neoliberalism, right? Neoliberalism is nothing other than, I promise this is the last big word I'm going to use. Neoliberalism is nothing other than capitalist imperialism with a socially responsible face or democratic rhetoric, right? Pretending like somehow we have figured out a way to make capitalist imperialism responsible to society. That somehow we figured out a way to make it reasonable for the world's poor. But that is a lie, because there is physically no way to take people's land, labor, and resources by force for profit in a socially responsible way. That is a lie of this country's political economy, and it's important that we begin to understand it. So, among the agents that I've identified, the first agent is a conglomeration between the G8 countries, the 8 most powerful countries in the world, and the World Trade Organization. These two entities together have the purchasing power, the dollars, to decide our worth, our labor's worth, our land's worth, and our natural resources worth. These are the cats that are setting the standard for what you're considered to be valued at, what your life is considered to be valued at, what your work hours are considered to be valued at. The next agent identifies international financial institutions, which are basically major banks like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the American Development Bank, and major global investors and investing banks, right? These cats are the part of the system that kind of try to lubricate things and make things run smoothly and pretend like they're keeping the system alive by helping out poor people. If you go to any of these banks' websites, like the International Monetary Fund, the first paragraph always says the same thing. Our bank is helping out poor countries catch up and play ball with the rest of the world, yada, yada, yada. Well, the truth is that these banks are helping out poor countries by giving them huge loans with huge interest rates that balloon and are impossible to pay back. Sounds a lot like the subprime mortgage crisis that we're having in this country right now. The subprime mortgage crisis in this country was a case of banks and investors being like, wow, look, there's all these Americans that can't afford to get houses. If we make houses accessible to these Americans, we'll be able to boost the economy. How did they make housing available to these Americans? They gave them loans without background checks with zero interest rates, and then within a year or two, interest rates skyrocketed. People couldn't pay their homes. Dun, dun, dun. Here we are. The subprime mortgage crisis was the case of the same chicken hawks that have been feeding off of Mexico and Argentina and global south countries for decades coming home and feeding on American people. Now we get to get a little feeling of what that feels like, right? Average Americans that really didn't feel the crunch of global economic crises finally are starting to feel it a little bit. So that's the second agent. The third agent, you all know, is transnational corporations such as Levi's, Coca-Cola, Burger King, McDonald's. They try to put a Taco Bell in Mexico City. I don't know. Did not allow that to happen. Transnational corporations, what are they doing? They're looking to make a profit. How do they make a profit? By making, producing their products as cheaply as humanly possible. And how are they figuring out to produce their products as cheaply as humanly possible? By exploiting cheap labor in global south countries. By extracting cheap raw materials and resources from global south countries. By taking advantage of the fact that in Mexico, you don't have a right to just a one-hour break after an 8-hour workday. You don't have the right to take a pee during a 10-hour workday. You don't have a right to have air conditioning or have face masks or gloves when you're dealing with chemicals. You don't have a right to any of the basic things like a weekend or benefits or health care, any of the basic things that we take for granted here, you don't have a right for those things. And that's why Nike is moving its manufacturing plants to the global south, taking jobs away from Americans and exploiting Mexicans in real messed up situations, right? So that's what the corporations are doing. Like, how do we make a buck? Well, we make a buck by getting the cheapest raw materials, we make a buck by getting the cheapest labor, and let's do that at whatever cost. And the corporations are the ones that are like sharks, because they're proving that that the system is all about making a profit, fuck everything else. This is our priority, right? And if we hurt somebody or somebody gets in the way, well, too bad, right? Because this is dog eat dog, and that's what this is about. You know, it's about getting to the top by whatever means necessary. The fourth agent is the most difficult to break down, and I think most difficult for Americans to palate. Identify it as a business, political, narcotics mafia that exists throughout the world that is truly benefiting to the imposition of this political economy. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that every businessman or politician in Global South countries is a drug dealer, right? But what I am saying is that the most powerful drug dealers throughout the Global South and throughout the United States, they send their kids to private schools, which is like the most powerful politicians and businessmen. They go on vacation to Vail, Colorado twice a year, just like the most powerful Hollywood stars. They hang out at nightclubs, join country clubs, do all the things that the upper crust of society enjoys. The most powerful criminal enterprises are engaging in those activities, and their children and their partners are getting legitimate jobs, legitimate educations, opening legitimate businesses, and really permeating what we would consider legitimate life and politics throughout our world. We have to begin to understand this as such. Now, I know that's some pretty bullshit to say out loud too, and I want to back that up. My first question to you all is, what is the most profitable, legitimate industry in the world today? I'm going to answer it because I want to move along. The most profitable, legitimate industry in the world today is weapons manufacturing. Weapons manufacturing is what made the United States be able to win the Cold War against the former Soviet Union. Otherwise, we would all be speaking Russian right now. Weapons manufacturing in the United States is the largest manufacturer of weapons in the world today. The United States is the only country that has used a nuclear bomb on another country. The United States is the only country that holds as much territory as it does hold with weapons today. Now, second question is, what is the most profitable illegitimate industry in the world today? And that's drugs. And when it comes to the United States, well, the United States is the number one consumer of drugs in the world today, driving the global drug market to begin with. Number two, the United States has the highest percentage of nonviolent offenders in prison because of drug convictions out of any country in the world today. And as a matter of fact, the United States has more people in prison than any other country in the world today, right? All the racist attitudes towards Middle Eastern people began after the September 11th attacks of 2001, Amnesty International's report on the United States usually focused on this country's prison industrial complex, because the numbers are way more out of hand than any other country in the world. For example, one statistic is that this country has the highest percentage of male rape because of its prison industrial complex of any other country. Those are the types of things that Amnesty was reporting on before all the Middle Eastern people. Sorry about that. Okay, now there are extreme examples, however, that I do have to note. Three presidents ago, Mexican President Carlos Salinas de Gortari, his brother, Raúl Salinas, is a known drug dealer, and it's proven that Raúl Salinas used money from the National Treasury, from his brother stealing money from the National Treasury to start up his drug running operation. Carlos Salinas supposedly lives in exile of Mexico today, but what's most disgusting about this situation is that up until a couple years ago, Carlos Salinas sat on the board of directors of a U.S. manufacturing corporation known as Westinghouse, which is the number one largest publisher of books in the world and the number two largest producer of nuclear weapons in the world. Right, and this cat got $300,000 a year to sit at the 40 million more seats. Right, between $120,000 and $300,000. So there are extreme examples where you have like actual presidents that are in cahoots with drug dealers and legitimate corporations. Right? But again, that's an extreme example. The fifth agent in the imposition of neoliberalism or the capitalist imperialist political economy is militarism. We don't talk enough about how military force is utilized to impose a political economy, right? Now, to begin with, military occupation or military force is the most blatant way of imposing a political economy. There's no hiding it. Soldiers go in, start shooting people up, you see it happening, regime change, war, death, casualties, all this stuff, right? But neoliberalism is much more than military occupation. Neoliberalism is political occupation, economic occupation, social, cultural occupation, psychological occupation, and the end, spiritual occupation. It is the imposition of a global consumer monoculture. It is the imposition of the American way of life. If you go to Mexico or any global south country in this hemisphere and look at the billboards on highways in these countries, you see that 90% of the characters on billboards in these brown countries are white people, right? The same holds true for soap operas, television commercials, news broadcasts, what else? Magazines, right? Whatever it is. In Oaxaca, the state that I live in, which is 70% indigenous, all of the mannequins and women's clothing shops in Oaxaca are white. Right? This is a systematic devaluation of indigenousness. Right? One of the most prevalent cosmetic products sold in indigenous communities or communities of color around the world to women of color is skin bleach. Because indigenousness and color has been devalued into a deathly silence, intentionally. This isn't a mistake. This isn't a byproduct of a system, a symptom. But rather, it's a direct relationship. It's intentional. It's intentional because indigenous is frightening to the system, and I'll get to that in just a second. Now, when it comes to military occupation, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. You don't have to just do it with armies. One of the ways that we're seeing in Mexico, and we're going to begin to see in this country more and more, is the militarization of the police. Our police are starting to look a lot more like soldiers. We're not supposed to be policed by soldiers, but our police are wearing fatigues, combat boots, they got machine guns. More and more, if you participate in any sort of political activity, protest in this country, you're going to see more and more of a military attitude from the police. We've been seeing this in Mexico steadily for the last 10, 15 years with the creation of the Federal Prevention Police, which is basically soldiers in blue uniform. Right? Now, there's a more insidious method of militarism, which is unfortunately something that I've specialized in, and we call it paramilitarism. Paramilitarism can be defined in a lot of different ways. Militarized police are technically a form of paramilitary, but for the purposes of this discussion, I would define paramilitaries as militarized civilians. When governments or land barons or mafias arm and train civilians to attack other civilians. In Oaxaca, we're seeing this done to arm and train one tribe in order to attack and control another tribe. Here in the United States, we're seeing it as arming and training one gang to control and attack another gang. A similar strategy of paramilitarism going on here in the United States. So paramilitarism in Mexico is permeating all walks of life. It's not just in random places like the jungle. It's happening in high schools. It's happening in colleges. Meetings like this are at risk of being attacked by instigators, by provocateurs on a regular basis in Oaxaca, Mexico. That's something that's like one part of our personal security that we take into account whenever we come together on a regular basis. The sixth agent and final agent to the imposition of this political economy, to the imposition of neoliberalism around the world, is the American people. And all of us in this room included on certain levels, right? There's lots of reasons that the American people or people that are benefiting from this country's political economy are guilty of complicity. One of them is ignorance, you know, not knowing that participating in this system is actually a problem. But more often than not, more than ignorance, we're dealing with people that are engaged in apathy, and worse, arrogance, right? This country is one of the most arrogant countries, probably the most arrogant country in the world. This country consumes 50% of the world's resources and produces 40% of the world's waste. How many of y'all have flushing toilets? All of us in this house? Well, all of us are guilty of flushing our poop with drinking water, while over a billion people in this world don't have access to drinking water. We shower with drinking water in this country. You know? We flush our poop with drinking water in this country. That's very significant and really important for us to understand. I want to break it down like this. In Oaxaca,
I have a tank of water that's like maybe from there to here and about this deep. And that tank hasn't been filled all summer because we have to get a truck to come fill it up. And my roommates that are there, they don't have any money. So there's no water. No dishwater. No, and that's our dishwater and bathing water. You can't drink that water. Our drinking water comes in big bottles that we have to buy. Right? That's the day-to-day. That's normal. When we do have water, when we shower, we turn on the water, hose off, turn off the water, soap up, turn on the water, rinse off, turn off the water. Ooh, we just saved a bunch of water. Another thing that we do is we put buckets in the showers so that the shower will fill up the bucket and then we use that water to flush the toilet. Some friends of mine in Denver once, since I mentioned it to them, they started flushing their toilets with buckets in the shower and they said that it cut their water bill to less than half. Example, right? So these are some basic things that we engage in, things that we take for granted that really make us among the most arrogant people in the world. And we really need to address just the most basic aspects of our arrogance in order to at least start to undo some of the horrible things that this country has gone for over the last 8 years under George Bush. So let me see, where should I go there? I think it's really easy to identify all of these enemies, all of these characters that I've talked to you, all these instances and situations that I've shared with you today, I think it's really easy to do that. A 9-year-old child on the blunt end of the system could break it down for you. You know, a survivor, any survivor, an illiterate survivor of this system could break it down for you. As a matter of fact, it's illiterate survivors of this system that have broken it down for me. Not college professors or any book or anything like that, right? However, what is more difficult is for us to begin to talk amongst ourselves as progressives, as activists, as organizers. How are we still perpetuating the system? How are we our own enemies? How are we causing problems? How are we contributing to this? So I call this section, and I'll just run through it really quick, I call it activist imperialism. The United States and in Europe, we have this really messed up attitude about feeling like we're going to be Superman and swoop in and save the brown people or save the poor people or save, you know, whoever is considered to be beneath us, right? And there's a lot of language and rhetoric behind this stuff that I think we really need to start to tackle more head on. The first word that I want to complain about is the word empowerment. You hear a lot of nonprofits and non-governmental organizations talking about our nonprofit empowers youth of color to seek leadership and excellence. Our nonprofit empowers women. Our organization is empowering indigenous people. That is the most condescending shit you can say to a group of people, because what it does is it places power in the hands of activists and negates the power that communities and people have in and of themselves. It pretends that we live in a world where only activists are the ones that are prepared to wield power. Meanwhile, people in resistance have no power to wield. The fact is that people in resistance have the ultimate power. It is people's power that's going to make this serious change, right? So I don't have a real serious solution to the problem of this word empowerment that bothers me so much. But my proposal is maybe to start thinking about contributing to self-empowerment. How is your nonprofit, or how is your solidarity work, or how is your NGO actually contributing to the self-empowerment of the communities that you're working in? Are you writing yourself into the script as a superhero, or are you writing yourself out of the script little by little and contributing to a community's ability to defend itself, to organize itself, to resist for and by itself, right? So that's my rant on empowerment. Let me think of another word here that bothers me. Oh yeah, this one you hear a lot in California. Sustainability, or sustainable development, right? More and more in the United States and in Europe, sustainability is an energy efficient car, a compost bucket, an organic bar of soap, a fair trade cappuccino latte, right? All these products. Sustainability has become products, has become merchandise to be bought and sold by who? More and more to be bought and sold by a bourgeois political class of people who wish nothing more than to feel guilt-free for their participation in this capitalist imperialist system. Now, I'm not saying that those products are not steps in a positive direction. They are steps in a positive direction. But to believe that they are ends is to be dead wrong. Because for us in the Global South and in poor communities all over the world, sustainability is defined as one word. Defined as survival. Right? So while these fools are commodifying merchandise to be produced by corporations to somehow co-opt sustainability, no products are being manufactured, no technologies are being manufactured to actually contribute to poor people's survival. Period. The technology curve leans towards a for-profit mechanism where only a bourgeois political class folks can afford the technology are having technology produced for them. But none of the poor people that need technologies have anything being produced for them. So we find in Oaxaca that we need to create those technologies ourselves, and you'll see some of that in one of the videos.
I got a lot of these words that piss me off.
Next one that bothers me pretty much is this notion of non-violence, right? Now, I'm not against non-violence, and I don't consider myself a violent person, but I do have serious issues when organizers or progressives in this country tell me that my community is violent, or tell me that the methods of resistance that I'm showing them in these videos coming from indigenous communities in Oaxaca and Chiapas are violent, right? To me, there's a very clear distinction that needs to be made between violence and self-defense. When we're engaging in self-defense of a territory, identity, community, culture, history, it's not violent. Self-defense is a strategy in non-violence, right? Self-defense is a right that we have, and a right that our people have. And in this country, we've been systematically told that to engage in self-defense is violent. And then we've been turning the religion. We're getting dominated more and more and more, right? And the truth is that in hoods in this country, we've seen what happens historically when we get pissed off. We wall out. And we need people to stand in solidarity with us when that stuff happens. Because we've seen what happens. Every time our communities organize, historically, any times our communities have organized for community self-defense, be it indigenous people, be it the Black Panthers, be it the Nietas, Latin Kings, or the history of the Brown Berets, we see what happens. COINTELPRO, infiltrations, incarceration, people getting killed, etc., etc. Right. So, just wanted to throw that one out there. There's a lot of these words. I think I'm going to do one more at the end, but how about we watch some video and kind of lighten up the topic. What I want to show you all is, what time is it? What time is it? Okay, what I want to show you all is a 20-minute film that is going to cover a lot of ground for people that haven't really dealt with a lot of this stuff, and I think it'll be just a good intro to stuff that's going on. In 1994, there was an uprising that began in Mexico called the Zapatista National Liberation Army. The Zapatistas took over 4 counties in the southern state of Chiapas in response to provisions that were imposed in Mexico by the signing of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which would privatize indigenous land, impose strict trade regulations, import U.S. corn, devalue Mexican corn, do all kinds of things to basically screw over Mexico's indigenous. The Zapatistas are still there today. They still hold 4 counties. They're still holding those counties with machine guns, right? This was an armed insurgency. It's important to understand that they're still there today. More recently, they've been organizing. Originally, they had engaged in peace talks with the government and trying to figure out a way to make stuff work out. But in 2001, they broke peace talks with the government and began to engage in their own strategies for self-determination and autonomy by reaching deep into their history and looking at their grandfathers' and grandmothers' ways of organizing, and begin to organize basically sovereign territory inside of the state of Chiapas. More recently, they've organized a national anti-electoral politics campaign known as the Other Campaign. And they've been touring all over Mexico, listening to people in all corners, all walks of life, and listening to grievances about politicians, about how politicians have never met the needs of the people, how politicians are only seeking power, about how politicians have never been able to actually represent anybody, not just indigenous, but poor people in general. So the other campaign has been organizing and gaining momentum, and this New Year's they organized the first international festival of Dignified Rage. And we went along with a couple of brown berets that are in the room tonight, and some mechistas, Chicanos college students, and we went with kids from Oaxaca. In particular, we went with a cooperative from Oaxaca that creates alternative sustainable technologies by making bicycle machines, bicycle blenders, bicycle corn grinders, stuff like that. So you'll see some of them. And then we also went with people from Radio Planton, which is a pirate radio station in Oaxaca, and a very important figure from the social movement, Doctora Munoz. You'll hear her talk about defensive animals. And we all got on the big bus. We went to meet up with the International Festival in Mexico City. The festival starts there. And then we all moved from Mexico City to Zapatista territory, you know, in Chiapas, in the big bus. And hung spent the New Year's with the rebels there. And then the next week, there was forums and stuff going on in San Cristobal de las Casas, which is a city just outside of rebel territory. And if you recall, during the New Year was when Israel was heavily bombarding Gaza. And by January 2nd, there were 1,000-plus Palestinians that had been murdered by Israel. So in Chiapas, since we had all these international people standing in solidarity with the Zapatistas, we organized an international solidarity march in solidarity with the people of Palestine, and that's where the film ends. So, let's watch the video. It's 18 minutes, and then we'll see where we can take this stuff.